Hi, I'm John.
Hi, I'm Olivia.
And I'm Clay.
And this week, we've watched Mirror Mirror. And now we're going to argue about whether it'll make us quit Star Trek.
This episode is actually, it's going to be on my high art list. So I'm going to open with that. It makes me want to leave the house and go out and buy a gold sash and really just complete my summer look. Okay.
By what, murdering someone?
No, John, please focus on the fashion, not the fascism.
You're going to walk around London with a knife stuck in your boot. You see, we all know how that ends.
Some would argue, actually, no, I was going to make a very bad joke. Never mind. I was going to do that. Not going to say that.
When you talk about the fashion, are you talking about the men's fashion or the women's fashion? Because the bare midriff is an interesting choice.
Think we should have seen some men in those midriffs.
Right, yeah.
I would support that. There we go.
I think the boots, the trousers, the sash, the crop top, yeah.
The main thing I think about with that is Nichelle Nichols has a very enviable... Like, she has very enviable ab muscles. She's showing them off in that episode where I was like, wow. Like, that kind of cut me off.
For a workout, for sure.
It's right. Kind of tragic that this is the episode where Uhura gets to do the most.
Especially considering what she gets to do. Because there are two things that she gets to do in the episode. And the first is related to her responsibilities as a communications officer. And then she almost breaks down. And Kirk has to come in as the big strong guy and be like, you can do this. Like, you've got this, Uhura. Because otherwise she wouldn't have had the confidence, right? And then the second thing is she has to seduce Sulu.
Yeah. I decided to pretend that, well, I decided to, in my own head, canonize the fact that she was pretending to be scared. She just wanted to be held, like Spock style. Like, you know how Kirk holds Spock in the shoulders? She just wanted to experience that one time. And that's how I defend that choice.
That's a good
interpretation. Why does Shatner hold people like that?
Because
it's just him.
Safe.
No one else does it. I hate to agree with Olivia's high art list, but it's a good episode about evil people.
I think I submitted this a year ago, and
yes, you did.
I really, really wanted to like. I'm the kind of guy that looks at like a franchise sacred cow and say, I'm going to take that down. Like it's easy to go after Threshold or Masks or whatever, but Mirror Mirror, like that's a classic. Like as I was preparing for this, I was thinking about not just its impact on the franchise, but it's had a massive pop cultural impact. That's impossible to deny, but My few word review would be it's a fine episode. And I don't like it for a lot of reasons that have nothing to do about the internal quality of the episode. And I was thinking that as I watched it. And so that's probably going to be a couple different discussions depending where we go. But
yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that within itself, it's great.
Yes.
But like a scab. Or Patrick Stewart, or Brent Spiner, Star Trek can't leave it alone.
Yeah, and it's, you know, If you think about that impact on the franchise, it's very strange that it's sought to return to the well of the Mirror Universe so many times in the latter half of when the franchise existed, because Star Trek, like TNG didn't do that as much. Like the only callbacks it had to the original series before season three were like McCoy in one episode and Sarek in another, which you've seen them return to the well a lot more frequently in the newer shows, and the Mirror Universe is that well, because it doesn't come back until Deep Space Nine.
I mean, I guess TNG couldn't afford to go back to the original series yet. They were trying to differentiate themselves.
That's true. By using scripts for the phase two show.
I mean, it's also that, like, even DS9's Mirror Universe also has very little in common beyond the, ooh, what if they were all evil? It's like, apart from that point, the setting is completely different.
Yep.
There's a little more like, ooh, but what if they were also bisexual?
Yeah, but that's kind of also in this one.
Then you also get into problematic tropes in the Deep Space Nine thing. And this is, again, off topic, but like Intendant Kira is like a vamp. She's like a villainous bisexual, which is its own kind of like villainous trope that feels maybe a little outdated today, but they did do that in Deep Space Nine.
And then they did it. They have the bit in Discovery where yep. Emperor Georgia is like, oh, you see, in my universe, my Culber and Stamets are all pansexual, so they're better. It's like
the worst line ever. It's honestly the most embarrassing scene.
I mean, everything about Emperor Georgia is embarrassing.
Yeah, I really like. I'm gonna try and wait towards the end before I start going off on Mirror Georgia, because it's sort of unfortunate, because I really liked Prime Georgia, and she only gets like that one episode, but
yeah.
But we'll get to that.
Shall we get to it?
Yes.
So, I mean, we start, it's like sort of semi-classic start. Kirk's on a soundstage, which tends to be a planet, talking to a bunch of guys who are dressed like they're ancient Greeks for some reason. On a podium.
That's space pacifists. Pacifists all look like Greeks.
It's in the rules. And these guys are like, we don't want you to give you our dilithium crystals or let you mine them because you might use them for evil. And Kirk's like, well, we can't promise we won't, but we promise we won't. And they're not really keen on it. And Kirk's kind of not happy about it, but there's a storm brewing and he's not going to push them on it. So, you know, Kirk, McCoy, Scotty, Uhura, they beam back, except they don't. They beam onto the Nazi ship.
And we're greeted by a beautiful vision. We see our boy Spock, and he has a beard. How can it be bad if it starts like that?
Well, they made a Jewish man do a Nazi salute in it.
Oh, no. I didn't even think about that.
They made two Jewish men and one Second World War veteran do a Nazi
destroyed me.
Let's just think about that. They made two Jewish men and a veteran of the Normandy battlefield do a Nazi salute.
Oh, God.
Now, so these are questions that I was having during the episode is how explicitly Nazi or specifically fascist are the Terrans in this single episode? Because there's a lot of stuff that we think of as the Mirror Universe and Terrans that I didn't notice. Like, Spock's more or less treated as an equal, and he references Vulcans being part of like his, you know, group, I guess. And there's none of the racism that you see involved when like Enterprise returns to the Vulcans or when Discovery returns to Hell, the Terrans steal the Vulcans. Like the Vulcans seem to be like on equal terms with the Terrans. And so because fascism's really dependent on the race stuff. You know, fascism isn't just authoritarianism. It's also very, very linked to the race stuff. And I don't know how much of that you see in the episode.
None of the race. It feels more, I know I said that too, but it all feels a lot more caricatured Roman.
Yeah.
Like Asterix and Obelix Roman, but evil. Like that level of just viciousness. Like the whole assassinating to get up the rank is a bit more Roman than it is Nazi.
I'm not as familiar with Roman history as I am like modern history. That was sort of my wheelhouse when I was in undergrad. So how common were assassinations to move up the ranks among the whole of the Roman Empire?
Well, they're not very common. I mean, it was much more common when the empire was falling apart, but that tended to be just at the top. Like at a captain's level, not really.
And in the Mirror Universe, that's a core component of their social organization.
As is apparently torturing Kyle, who did nothing to deserve.
Kyle being tortured there as well? Oh dear.
Kyle's been back to the beginning, and it's like, poor Kyle. So first, like, he's now not even an officer. He's an enlisted crewman, and now he's getting sacked. It's...
Well, my favorite part of that is Spock's, like, give me your agonizer. So he uses the man's own agonizer to agonize him. Like, that was a neat little touch there, where it wasn't Spock drawing his own. Like, you have your agonizer on you, so I can use it to torture you.
Honestly, all these torch devices just take me to Gene's true vision. I just feel like there's some underlying thing where he was like, this would be a fun idea, but I have to write a sci-fi episode, so let me just make it a little more evil.
So this Spock is a dick, so they all go and hide in McCoy's office, being Nazi saluted on the way, and Mira McCoy is a slob, which is okay. Then they figure out it's, oh, we must be in a mirror dimension, and we have to stop them from murdering the Hulkans, which, like, I mean, I like that thing that, like, their immediate problem is, like, oh, not only do we have to get back, oh, we have to stop a genocide.
That was probably my favorite thing about the episode. This goes back to something I saw you say recently about how so much of the conflict in TOS is about the application of force. And that's the opening conflict with the Hulkans in the Prime universe. They're like, he says, like, you have the power to take them from us if you want. And Kirk says, but I want. And so, like, the show lays out really quickly what the theme is, that the humans of Star Trek won't do that. They wouldn't do that. And then they get to the mirror universe, and the first priority is to make sure that they don't kill these people. And that feels like a very Star Trek priority to have. Like, yeah, we need to get back, but that takes second place. Go shut off the phaser arrays. I thought that was a nice touch, sort of leaning into the ethical values of Star Trek.
Yeah. There's no sort of, oh, maybe we could just kill them a bit, or it's just what it is, which would be weird.
Kill them a bit.
Listen, I don't know.
Just destroy some of their major cities. Not the whole planetary surface.
Some retaliation as a treat. We get to Scared Uhura. Like, they start making their plans, and then, like,
yeah.
they just have to add a little moment where Kirk has to comfort Uhura because she's so scared. I mean, wasn't she trained for this? They were all trained for this. There's no reason that Uhura is going to be any more scared than anyone else, okay? We didn't need to see that.
Would they be trained to be thrown into an alternate reality where they're all evil?
They're trained for uncertainty.
That's true.
She would not have, like, crumbled that far in, I believe.
She handled it better than I would have. I would have lost it the moment that I saw Goatee Spock, because the triangular shape is just evil. And then
they all held it and did go, what the fuck is going on, until they were like, in a safe place, is pretty remarkable.
Very professional.
I would die because I'd enthusiastically compliment the new look and they would immediately figure me out.
They'd immediately kill you.
Like, what?
We don't get to see it, but in that scene, they're like, this means that our alternate counterparts would be in our own universe. They're running around in our own reality. What are they doing? And the only time you see them in the show, Spock's already thrown them in the brig. And I think that that's so funny. I mean, Spock references it at the end of the episode, but you don't get to see it. But I just imagine Mirror Kirk coming off the transporter pad, screaming at Spock for not saluting him.
Yeah, it definitely felt like an immediate reaction. Right, like, yeah. Oh, you're not Kirk. Bye. He just knows him so well.
So Uhura goes up to the bridge, and Shackleton and Sulu are here. They don't say anything, but you know they're evil. I mean, Sulu's got a scar. He's wearing red, his hair is terrible, and he's flirting with Uhura.
The flirting is, sure, yeah.
That tracks enjoying the himself, but I don't think he should be allowed to.
he's like the ancient Gestapo, as Scotty says.
I do like that. I do like how everything that's like me saying it's like the ancient slave trade of America. It's like,
right.
That's how far away it is. It's like 250 years ago. Oh yeah, the ancient English Civil War.
I think that's the only, I think that's the only explicit reference to the Nazis when Scotty compares Sulu to the Gestapo.
In this episode, yeah, I think
it Yeah, is. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll get there.
We'll do that episode at some point. But, so, and then Bridge comes, Kurt comes onto the bridge. He gets the Nazi salutes. His chair is bigger. I love his chair is bigger for some reason. Like, why is this, what's the purpose of making his chair big? Is it so he can't be stabbed in the back?
Is that a completely different chair?
Yeah, no, it's, they put a different back on the chair.
Oh, I thought you were telling me there's another chair out there that I could somehow in my dream world source at an auction.
No, it's like, you know how Kirk's chair has like a really low back and probably doesn't have much, very good lumbar support?
Yeah.
Well, this chair has great lumbar support.
They're just letting you know that this Kirk is lacking in other areas.
You know what they say about a man with good lumbar support. So, and then basically everyone gets fussed because our Kirk doesn't want to commit a genocide.
Which, yeah, if you were, as a man, why are you not willing to commit a genocide? Valid questions. I do like how obvious, like the way of like displaying how evil they are is kind of just like very theatrical, because we have this scene where Chekhov's in the lift and he's just sort of menacingly looking at Kirk like it's so theater kid. I
this whole episode is theater kid energy.
You've got 50 minutes. You've got 50 minutes to tell the audience that this universe is really bad.
It's slightly comical, which is
You have no time for nuance to explain that part of the story.
Was that scene? Kirk immediately enters the lift and gets knocked out by who was it? It wasn't Carl, was it?
He just gets hit by some random guy.
Oh my gosh. Even worse affront.
And then Sulu, Chekhov's henchmen hold him while Chekhov does his whole theater kid, I'm gonna kill you so I can go up in the ranks thing. And then one of Chekhov's goons rebels, I guess, and vaporizes Chekhov's guys.
Well, he's a little bitch. Let's get it clear. He immediately sees the tides have turned and he's like, okay, I'm going to kill Chekhov now. Whatever happens there.
And then, yeah, this guy is like, oh, will you promote me? And Kirk's like, no. And punch him.
Not on my ship.
It's a good bit, and it's sort of like Kirk is very good at playing evil. But not
he's
as
having fun, that's what that is.
Not as evil as Mira Kirk, who killed Captain Pike, genocided the planet, and then murdered 9,000 colonists.
Yeah, I liked that because that's when he cuts off the historical record.
Yeah, like, he's like, that's
enough. That's enough of that.
I would like to know what happens in the arena episode of the Mirrorverse. How is Gorn? Is he well? I need to know.
I'm sure somebody's written a book about it.
How did Mirror, Kirk, and Spock handle Amok time?
I don't even know which direction I even want that to
take. I don't know. I don't want to think. There's so many, the answers that immediately popped to my head. I just know.
How did they both get out of that circumstance alive?
I mean, there's an answer, I just don't really want to say it. I mean, I'll just say, you ever seen Seven Brides for Seven Brothers? That's
no,
just gonna well, listen, if you can't take Spock to the bring, you bring to bring to Spock whether she wants to or not.
Oh no.
I mean, it is established later the canonicity of the mirror universe is they're all pansexual, right?
Oh god. Wait, is that what is really being implied in that scene? That it's already terrible. But is everyone actually just pan? Ugh.
Who knows?
And I really feel like that wasn't even a mistake. I guess it was to reflect that it's the mirror universe, but I feel like it's a mistake of the actual writers. Like they think that's a fun thing to say. It doesn't feel like it was intentionally wrong. I don't know.
This oh man, this way lies monsters. I think if we were to go down that rabbit hole too far.
I just, can I trust the writers who bury that many gays? No.
They're very gays, like they were fucking Supernatural.
Well, they also exhumed gays, so.
Yeah, well, that's cheating.
It's just more trauma to live with. And then have we discussed Mad Kirk? We have.
Oh no, we're just getting to it now, which is that, so is it this bit? Yeah. You so it's like, oh no, our other selves must be on our ship. What did they get up to? And it's just, we just cut to like evil Kirk being thrown into the brig, and like all of the mirror guys yelling, and Spock's just like, I know who you are.
I would love to have been in the audience of that. That seemed fun.
I'd like to imagine, like, the moment they beam back and start yelling, Spock just sort of slowly leaves over to the console and just goes, security in the transporter room while they're yelling at him. He's just like, immediately, like, no, you guys are wrong.
You want riches, Spock? You want your own command? Fascinating.
I do like that. You literally watch evil Kirk go through like anger, fear, bargaining in like 30 seconds. And William Shatner's having so much fun.
Substance of the bargaining that I think says a lot, right? And I think Mirror Spock even says something later when he's lamenting Kirk's actions, because he's saying that, like, you know, I've respected your command. It's been very profitable, which is already just in one word saying like what their goal is. What the value of their expeditions are.
Yeah, it's just money and power.
How bad is Mirror Spock? Because he kind of seems like a nice guy at the end, I'd say.
So he's one of the more interesting mirror characters, and it's because there's nuance to him. Because he says, like, I have no interest in running this ship. I'll do it if I have to, but I'm much more interested in my scientific exploration. Like, you get the vibe that he's kind of just playing a part so that he can do his own thing and stay alive.
Maybe at best he's amoral. And he just, you know, wants to have his little scientific advancements at any cost. I don't know. He has to fit in somehow. Or is just Spock just beyond any evil? I would like to think that.
Yes. You get the feel, I mean, it's this sort of like, there's an element to it of the thing you read about with the Nazis where people just went on with it because they knew that if you keep your heads down and don't put your nose in anything, you'll live.
That's one of my biggest gripes with the later Mirror Universe world building, is that is the vibe that most of the Nazis would have had. They would have just been people trying to like live their life in low path of resistance, like, just, yeah, don't bother me, don't, you know, let me do my own thing. And you don't get that vibe from the later Terrans. The later Terrans all seem very much like they relish being evil.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is that you get the feeling that Spock doesn't really enjoy it.
I mean, it is a bit of a farce. It's just chaos every second someone's trying to kill the other person.
The thing that always gets me about the Mirror Universe is the same thing as like the whole, the Klingon fight to like constantly lift ships. Is that's just not a way to run anything. Like, even pirate ships didn't operate like that.
No.
You dock your captain in when he's shit. If a captain is good, you do what he wants you to do.
Plus, I think captains could, like, if they aren't in battle, they could vote. They could vote their captain out of power.
Yeah,
say, you're not doing this right. We're gonna vote. We're gonna let somebody else take over. But it wasn't like a violent transfer necessarily. So that kind of gets to probably my core review of Mirror Mirror, which is that, on its own, it's a fine little episode. It is a very science fictional idea of what if you went to another universe and you and everybody you knew were evil. It's a very simple what if setup with a relatively simple exploration of that. And I do not think it works if you return to it unless you add something to that. Unless you try to do something different with it. And I kind of feel like only the first Mirror Universe of Deep Space Nine does that.
Yeah. I mean, this is an episode that's not really about the universe. It's about the human character. It's about how we're all capable of terrible things.
Mm-hmm.
And with how
Spock even saying that at the end, like,
I mean, we get a sense of that sort of character stuff in this next bit, which is what. So there's a bit where we see Chekov getting tortured, which Walter, you're trying your best, but
why does he look like he's enjoying it?
He kind of, it's that sort of fake pain thing where it's halfway between being tortured and being tortured, you know. Sort of halfway between.
You, this is Gene's fault. He was probably in the background smiling.
I have to leave. Gene, we're already halfway through the show. I have to leave.
But I was wondering though, in what way do you think that DS9 has done it better? Because I can't think with clarity. As in, what have they added?
I can't. I mean, I think the DS9 version is worse. Clay?
Yeah, because I thought that was your point.
What's the question again? I didn't quite
understand. I was just like following from your point. You were saying that DS9 actually added to the Mirror Universe. I was wondering.
What did Deep Space Nine add? Well, Kirk asks, how long can this empire last? And Spock gives a very optimistic estimate of like 200 years before it falls apart. He's like, then do something to change it. And it's implied with later canon that Mirror Spock failed in some way. But in Deep Space Nine, it asks the question, what would happen to the Terran Empire in this kind of universe? Well, it falls apart. It falls apart to external threats because I think it's kind of on the face of it, like a civilization built on like competition with threat of death is probably not a viable one and probably would fall apart with external power, like being forced upon it. And then you end up with a completely different status quo, right? So it's a mirror universe, but the status quo is different. Like Quark is a good person in the mirror universe. Odo is an authoritarian fascist, so he's the same character. And you have Intendant Kira, who is like a Bajoran, but evil. And then you have like the Klingon Empire, the Cardassian Klingon Alliance, I think I remember. So the status quo is completely different, and the humans are like mean and bad, but they're not quite as over the top as most other depictions of it. So it's at least an idea of like taking the idea and exploring it from a different angle.
Yeah. I guess one of the most unrealistic parts of the Mirror Universe is that they're somehow at the exact same pace technologically. Like, there's no way you guys were cohesive enough at any point to be at the exact same pace as the
vibe that I got, the headcanon I have, is that they steal tech from the Vulcans at first contact and probably reverse engineer it and get that boost up to the NX class. And then they get the Defiant from the prime future, which they then can reverse engineer and is still a powerful warship by the time of discovery, right? And so it feels like they're keeping up because they're able to reverse engineer discoveries from outside their own, you know, civilization.
We should have seen things like collapsing and failing. That would have made it.
Yeah, I mean, this is something about the Discovery Mirror Universe. This is, it's deeply uninterested in displaying why fascism doesn't work, B, why autocracy doesn't work, and C, why monarchism did work. It's deeply uninterested in the whole concept that the reason that things like feudalism and Russian autocratic and imperialism and stuff lasted, even if they were doomed, was because they created an elite body that were interested in preserving power. They didn't put it in the place of one individual.
There are a lot of problems I have with how Discovery explored the Mirror Universe. There's a lot of things that I would have done differently, I think. I get the feeling they don't really understand fascism. Like, there's
The mirror universe guys. No, they don't. Whoever's,
I guess, like, whenever they delve into, like, the mirror universe, I think there's this feeling I get that they think fascism is, or is the clothing, the salutes, the slogans, the violence, the racism, and that's all there, but it also ignores one of the more, it's like Indiana Jones fascism, I guess. It's very ahistorical cinema fascism. Like, these are bad people doing bad things, when the more terrifying side of real world fascism to me is, here are good people doing bad things. Or if not good people, then people that would otherwise just be not committing atrocities, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking about The Man in the High Castle, which is a uniquely terrible piece of television. But the best part of that is that, the chief Nazi of Nazi America, when he goes to our universe, he's a used car salesman. He's a used car insurance salesman. Just a guy. He's a Pacific War vet with a son who had a degenerative illness and has been cured. And he's just a guy. You know, he's not anything, but in the Nazi universe, he runs
Wait, America. That's actually what The Man in the High Castle does. It shows you both.
It does, but then it fucks it up.
Oh, I didn't know that was part of
that. It's part of the original Philip K. Dick book, that the universes are linked a bit. But the TV show fucks it up. But we get that bit. And I think that's one bit I like with Man in the High Castle, that it's very clear that a lot of the people, even the Nazis and even the Japanese, are just trying to survive. And maybe, you know, this episode would have been better if Chekhov was assassinating Kirk because he didn't want everyone to get killed.
I mean,
or if they're all trying to survive, or if Marlena's motivations... Well, actually,
is Marlena the closest we get to this?
Yeah, because we get to this bit now, where after Kirk basically tells Spock, goes to Spock, maybe the Hulkers are right, you know. Conquest is easy, control is not, which is... There's a lot of good Kirk lines in this, but... So they go to Kirk's quarters, and he's got a lady friend who...
Of course he does.
Very interested in him and his power, and, you know, we get this sense that, you know, how this Kirk is different. You know, he's got his eyes on the Admiralty, on the cabinet, on becoming a Caesar, whereas, you know, the gym of the Prime Universe, the only place he ever wanted to get to is captain's chair. You know, that's the sort of long-standing theme. But I think you're right, Olivia. She's the closest we get to the sort of idea of somebody who's only interest in accumulating or being close to power is to ensure her own survival.
Yeah. I mean, she has no interest in staying in that environment. We'll get to it, but Kirk, you owed her an escape. He was so eminently fine with flirting and kissing with her almost immediately.
I was thinking about this on my second watch through. If they had managed to take her with them, wouldn't she have just been transplanted into the body of the other version?
With the prime version of her being sent to the mirror universe, which is worse.
Yeah.
Oh no. I was gonna say two Vix, but no, it's worse than that. If there was a way for them to coexist, he at least owed her a chance. But you know, instead he just, you know, relentlessly flirts, and she shows him his murder iPad or whatever the hell that thing is.
Oh yeah, it's the Tantalus field.
The Tantalus field, which I saw that Mirror Giorgio also has one in Discovery Season 3.
No one's figured out something's weird because people are just dropping dead. Like,
I guess the Tantalus field is a reference to like being disappeared.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
But if I watch someone be disappeared in front of me, I mean, I guess they can wait till they're in their own rooms. They have that control.
I think it's implied that that's what Kirk usually did, evil Kirk usually did.
Right.
But I guess also if you see somebody just get disappeared in front of you, you don't. You're more inclined to stop whatever you're doing.
Sure.
I was thinking about the Tantalus field because it does have the added assassination component, but... Okay, so this is something I was thinking about with Mirror Sulu and with the Tantalus field that is very different from the Prime Universe, which is surveillance. Because in TOS TNG, and our present day, they have the technology where they could like spy on people all the time. Think about how many plots are predicated on some detective mystery on board the ship, which would just be solved if they had cameras everywhere. But they don't have cameras everywhere. And so, one, I think that's just part of a, you know, so we can have more interesting plots. There are no cameras everywhere. But it also kind of says that they're a society that values privacy, right? Whereas this one, you know, Sulu's monitoring the comms. He's referred to as like an analog for the secret police. Kirk has a thing that even if he's not using it to kill people, he can spy on people constantly, like when they're not well known. I mean, that's something that authoritarian secret polices did even before this episode came out, you know?
I mean, it's not password protected. How egalitarian right. of him? Anyone can walk in there and start killing.
And so. Anyone does.
I wouldn't even notice if they were strategic about it.
I think it's a nice allegory for like Gestapo, Stasi-like power.
Yeah.
And Kirk's hesitancy to use it. I mean, well, there's a lot in this episode which is about how easy Kirk can blend into evilness, but how they can all blend into evilness, but how there's still this hard limit to what they're capable of.
I like that there's so much effort done to not just conceal themselves as being evil, but trying to, you know, preserve their own ethics and morals while they're there. Like, and I said this before with them trying to save the Hawkins, but I also just like that they have all these plans to keep them from destroying the Hawkins. And there's like so many, like they have there's so many trip ups, like go stop the phaser array. It would have been really easy for McCoy or for Scotty just to do that. And then there's like a hiccup. And so Kirk has to improvise and come up with something else. It was a nice bit of plotting, I thought, which is not quite what we're talking about, but still I wanted to.
Yeah, it's, I mean, we're getting, yeah. I do like that even in this universe, Spock's like, I'm still doing you a favor, you know. I've got orders to kill you. I'm just letting you know. if that means you want to do some genocide instead of letting me kill you, that's how it is.
I'm breaking a lot of protocol by telling you this, Captain, but...
Dear. So yeah, while Spock and the Spock and Sulu are talking about killing the Captain, you know, Scotty and McCoy are up to their shenanigans so they can beam back. Marlena changes into a see-through piece of fabric and a bikini.
It is the J-Lo dress. It is the J-Lo dress before J-Lo, and we need that established.
You know, I say a bikini and a piece of fabric, but that's literally what it was. William Westside didn't have time to design a costume.
Wait, what?
Well, so the woman who played Marlena Moreau, during production, she had a strep throat and 103-degree fever. So they had to postpone the kissing scenes for 2 weeks.
Oh, tragic.
And she lost a couple of pounds because of her illness. So they had to try and find a way to hide it.
Jesus.
So, she was like, I'll put a bikini on and wear this shawl and then no one will notice.
Oh my gosh.
It was probably saved her from the alternative, which is William Westside ripping off more of her skin with sellotape.
Oh dear.
I do appreciate, like, we have to wait 2 weeks before we can film the kissing scene. Everything hinges on the kissing scene. Like, we can't get rid of that. That's the only thing need to make sure we have.
It's in Bill's contract. like the wigs, you know.
Wait, but she says she was oiling her traps. What does that mean? In any version, I don't know what that means in any context. What does that mean? What's a trap?
Oiling
her. Is it a trapezius muscle?
I don't know. Oiling her. Like a horse. I feel like it's like a horse and cart thing. It sounds like a horse and cart.
I'm going to Google it and my history is going to be forever tainted. Oiling your trap.
I'm glad you're Googling it.
Maybe they have traps on board to capture dissidents that require oil to function?
Why would she go to his bedroom into the bathroom to fucking...
I don't know what it means. It doesn't make sense. I think it's just a weird sexual mechanical joke. Anyway, thank you for whoever gave us that. Whichever writer.
Did you find out what it was?
There's no explanation.
Oiling her trap.
Tips here. To keep your grease trap in good working order. Eliminate drain blockages. It's a dead end.
If you, as an IQ sergeant listener, know oiling your traps is a euphemism for, please tell us, because we don't know.
One of the results is make your own fat trap.
Oiling my traps, darling. I'm afraid I'm a little out of practice.
Exactly.
That's what happened to us. It's very hard for a working officer to shine as a woman every minute. And you demand perfection. What is the trapezius muscle?
It's so complex. Star Trek often leaves me speechless. That's all I'll say.
Okay, so it's the back muscles. It's the back muscles where the back connects to the neck.
She was stretching.
That's being sexualized? The back?
We're getting distracted from this being the only bit where Kirk is nice to anyone ever, where he's nice to her and she realizes something's wrong.
Oh, yeah. No, she really... She should have been saved, man.
If it makes you feel any better, at least some of the beta canon, like the books, because I was doing a little bit of research, Spock does try to establish a republic or a democratic society. And in those books, she and Spock get married.
Okay. Now I'm jealous. And I think she's got a little bit too much from life. Okay.
But then I think that they get killed.
Oh.
Spoilers for a book I don't remember the name of.
Sorrows of the Empire.
Wow.
I don't know why I know that. I've got better things to do. I'm very lonely. But, so...
Kirk's really has a lot of time to spend flirting.
Considering they've got 4 hours or they're stuck here forever, he's spending a lot of time snogging her.
Absolute liberty.
Enough time for Spock to figure out what's up. And then we get to Sick Bear and we have we have a fight with the dodgiest Spock stunt double I've ever seen.
I hadn't noticed before, I wasn't watching closely.
There's a scene where
you were too excited by the fight scene, right? It was just too engaging that you were completely bought into
watching Bones, McCoy, Uhura, and Scotty all repeatedly jump at Spock.
Definitely that. Definitely was not making notes on landlord remedies.
There's a bit where the camera jumps up to be above Sick Bay. And you Spock stunt. I was it's clearly not there anymore. He's not the same height. He's not the same body type. They basically painted his face green.
How dare they?
It's really bad.
What is it with the TOS and just painting people unnecessarily?
It's how you know that they're aliens.
Oh, dear.
They didn't have CGI back then, but they had perfected makeup technology.
I mean, they hadn't, but...
They'd invented makeup technology.
They still have the leftovers from the black and white era.
And we're treated to an extremely horny Sulu scene, which is just absurd. Because he's ready to get it on the bridge in front of five other people.
You didn't come back. And she taps the knife on his nose or something.
It's
so cute.
Nicole's and Takai are selling it really well, but it is a bit. This is the closest this episode gets to the cursedness of the Discovery and Enterprise mirror universe.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about about her in that scene. And this is the episode where she gets the most to do, ever in the entire series.
She fixes these stuff in Squire Gossos.
Plato's stepchildren, she gets serenaded to.
She gets serenaded to and kisses someone. She's in Gamester of Triskelon, which is an episode in which nothing of consequence happens. We got more of her content in one episode of Strange New Worlds than we got for the entirety of the original series.
So either way, it's a tragedy. Great.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
That's the 60s for you. It's done. What's done is done. So yeah, they fight Spock off, and Bones wants to try and not let evil Spock die, which is nice of him. But because he wants to do that, Sulu turns up, threatens to kill them all, and then Marlena zaps Sulu's henchmen. And for some reason, security chief, evil scarred, battle scarred, super evil Sulu gets like knocked up by Kirk in the easiest way possible.
All of those knockouts looked just very easy. No one looks good.
It's, you know, it's an error on Sulu's part, because that might not have happened if Sulu hadn't spent like the extra minute explaining the convoluted way in which, you know, Spock would kill him, but Spock would die of injuries, just so, you know, his prey knew like how screwed they were.
Is that what he says? It's kind of badass. Oh yeah,
he lays out like the entire, he's like, Spock will kill you, but he will die from his injuries, and then I'll become captain. It's like, thanks for letting us know your evil plan.
It's bomb villain shit. Which, good for Sulu. Everyone deserves a Blofeld moment.
Right.
And, you know, the gang, except McCoy, go to the transporter room, which means that McCoy gets to enjoy being having his mind melded against his will.
That's probably the most evil thing that Mirror Spock does, even if it's the thing that allows him to ultimately do something morally good.
He had to get to the bottom of it. He was at his limit.
Yeah.
I feel like he could have, if he was a better person, he would have just trusted his instincts, but he was not. And he had to do an invasive procedure instead.
He spent the last couple days dealing with a lot of really erratic coworkers. I mean, who among us?
Who among us?
Yeah, if I turn up to this podcast, Olivia, and, you know, said masks was great and didn't care about starships.
I would...
study geography.
If you had just opened with saying Mask was great, I think I would just accept this new replacement, John. This would be, I would overlook everything else. People would be like, Olivia, something's really off. I'm like, no, I think it's all good, actually. A win for Mask.
Spock has more scruples than you. And so he goes, so basically the gang gets to the transporter room. Marlena tries to stop them. Uhura gets the puncher, which for you, Uhura.
Have to get the girlies fighting.
Yeah. And then Spock turns up and is like, okay, I'm just going to let you guys go because you're not meant to be here, which gives Kirk the time to deliver actually his best, one of the best Kirk speeches. It's good.
Whatever. At this point, I'm just upset. I think Marlene should have shot Kirk. I think he deserved it.
Yeah, there's a lot of considering that she doesn't actually know his true identity. I mean, I guess he is trying to blend in, but he takes some liberties.
He took it way too far and he enjoyed it.
Yeah. Oh, and then he gets back and it's like, I feel like we could become friends, Mr. Spock.
Yeah, yeah, what creepy plans is he making for the future?
Yeah, that was really weird.
That was... Look, it's just a subordinate coworker.
I'm just the captain.
No, I recently read a thing on Daystrom Institute that was basically like, sexual norms in Star Trek have to be massively different from ours, because no, there's no way an HR department would tolerate anything that happens on those ships.
HR has been abolished by whatever year it is. I don't know the Star Trek timelines. I'm sorry.
I don't know. The 23rd century, maybe they don't. I don't know. It's a possibility.
So they're successful in their old switcheroo.
Yep. But, yeah, so they deliver the speech, you know, it's a good one. We get, you know, Kirk endorsing the great man theory of history, which, fuck you, Jim. You're wrong. In every revolution, there is not one man with a vision. There are large, complicated forces and sometimes Lenin. I don't know.
If we're are we tearing down the great man of history? Because I feel like you and I could really, really divert this episode completely off track.
We've been here nearly an hour. Scared. I think Olivia would kill us if we did that. I think Olivia, I'd go to London. Olivia would just say,
I would be waiting
to punish me. We could divulge this episode and talk about Star Trek's relationship with a great man theory of history, which doesn't have a great one, Mr. Universe Saved by Jim Kirk 6 dozen times. But instead, we'll cut back to the gang. The gang get back to their Enterprise. And I don't know if you notice this, like, when they come back, you see Kyle grinning, and there's this slight look on Spock's face like, oh, thank God.
Kyle had like, a great time in both universes.
Yeah. And he's just like, your counterparts all suck, and they were painfully obvious. But that's kind of a you problem, because that made them human. It was much easier for you to be evil than for them to be nice.
It was almost like they saw their therapist's notes. Like, they saw a side of them and they were exposed, even by the inverse. Oh, dear.
On the contrary, I feel like they were perfect specimens of the species Homo sapien.
I think we've I'm not sure, but I think we've just been insulted.
I know.
Any Spock burn that hard at the end of the episode makes it a 10 out of a 10.
It was a good Spock burn. It was a nice. So frequently, I feel like I see them trying to lean into Spock's human side. So there's always a nice moment where he's able to maintain that distance from the humanity, because I think that's, you know, makes them interesting as a foil for these other characters.
It's, yeah.
That was a 50% self-burn there, Spock.
Right. I mean, he's self-depreciating, good for him. As we said earlier, then Marlena appears and everyone's like, oh shit, it's her, and then Kirk's creepy, which a nice reminder that this was made in 1967.
Yeah. Nice.
Just in case you'd forgotten.
Homey vibes.
In the last couple of days online, we've learned that Star Trek is only just now becoming woke.
Oh, God, please.
But we can see that it was woke in the 60s, too, because it had a message for women in that era. See, you can be more than the concubine of an imperial warlord.
You can be the concubine of a captain in a society.
Hell yeah.
It does remind me of my favorite cursed line from TOS, which is when they're talking about human masters, and Kirk's like, you know, one day I come with human masters from other lieutenant, and Kirk's like to Bones, you know, she's a great offer, you know, someday she'll get married, she'll cycle out of the fleet, and I don't see it as losing an officer. I see it as, and then there's a pause, and he goes, no, I'm just losing an officer, and it's just like, I think you're trying to do something here, writers.
I thought that was going to get worse. It would be like, she'll have a kid and then he'll be a captain.
Yeah, it's like, I felt like they were trying to subvert that whole idea of like, oh, look, women are better when they're mothers. But then they just sort of did that.
Nah. Give up 50% of the way through. That's fine.
But yeah, so Mira. Trivia-wise... there's not much Nazi context in the Mirror Universe. It started very loosely on a original script where Kirk gets stuck in a parallel universe where the Federation has lost a war with a species called the Tharns. This is the first time that Scotty calls Kirk Jim.
Cute.
Yeah, there's no, the writers did not, like, there's no explicitly, yeah, we were talking about nonsense here.
There's really only that one reference.
Yeah.
To the Gestapo.
The visuals and the directing is obviously informed by Vroom. If anything, actually, the Mirror Universe style is a very specific evil style. Like, most mirror universe, most comparison I can think of post-dated. Like, mirror, like, ooh, evil versions of characters. Most concepts of that I can think of don't come till after this, so obviously informed by it.
Yeah, that's the thing. So I was thinking about the pop cultural impact because it was big. Like, the idea of, like, the goatee being the thing that denotes that someone's an evil parallel counterpart, I'm pretty sure comes from this. And you see it in a lot of different things. So there's, like, I don't watch it anymore, but there's an episode of South Park where there's a Cartman with a goatee and he's nice because he's the evil version, because the real Cartman's, like, evil. I mean, they included that because they're Star Trek fans. There's Community, and probably its best episode, the remedial chaos theory, where there's, like, seven different universes. And one of them is, like, everything goes bad and at least one of them dies. And so Abed, like, I've cut out goatees for everybody to put on until they can grow their own, because clearly we're in the worst timeline. So, like, the meme of the worst timeline comes from that and has its lineage to Mirror Mirror. And there's another show that neither of you have probably heard of, but it's called Magus XLR. It's a giant robot that's also a car. It was on when I was in college, so that means it was on when y'all were kids or not born yet. I don't know.
Okay, terrible things like that.
I think it was on TV in, like, 2004, 2005.
Okay, we were alive.
We were in existence. Okay, all right. It's all good.
I think I had cognizance then.
It's an American
show. I'm not sure.
It's an American show that's a parody of, like, giant robot anime, but it's also a parody of, like, science fiction stuff. Like, Michael Dorn, Worf, comes on as, like, a guest star in one episode.
Okay, I don't like it because Michael Dorn shouldn't get work.
Oh.
Personally, I don't believe in Michael Dorn getting paid.
He's got such
one day this anti Dorn content is going to come back to bite us. I don't know how.
Well, when I meet Michael Dorn, what's he going to do?
He's going to talk in a deep voice.
Yeah, so that's it. That's all he can do.
So
Tony Todd can talk in a deep voice and also act.
So the final episode of Magus XLR, they end up going to an alternate universe where everyone's evil and the main character is an evil, like, his counterpart is evil and he has, like, a goatee. And the name of the episode, because the show's about car robots, Rear View Mirror Mirror, which is an explicit reference to Star Trek.
Amazing.
I want to do, like, research into science fiction, like, how common was the idea of a parallel evil universe counterpart before Mirror Mirror? Because, I mean, I'm sure they got the idea from somewhere. But then, like, so much of it afterwards feels like it was at least, if not inspired by Mirror Mirror, then, like, cognizant of it and referencing it.
100% putting Star Trek is popularizing that. For better or for worse.
Which is also one of the reasons why I feel like it's so surprising that Deep Space Nine waited until, like, the mid to late 90s before they ever revisited the Mirror Universe. And even then it was, like, a status quo that was really different from the one depicted in the show.
It's... Yeah, I don't know. My head went empty. I'm sorry.
I mean, John and I have this point of contention against the Mirror Universe, and I've offered them an alternative option. You either have Mirrorverse or Masakaverse, and they won't take the simple offer, the simple concession I'm making to you. Choose one.
No.
Choose one.
Absolutely not. I will not choose between...
We should see Corgano once a series, Sash. Show.
What if we don't? What if we never see him again? What if he never comes back?
Strange New Worlds, it's on you. Anyway, I think are we at a quit point?
We are. Are we quitting? I don't think I can quit this episode.
I don't want to quit either.
It's for me, it's the episode on its own is fine. I really like the ethics of the episode. Like the idea that, like, you know, our first priority is keeping these people safe. And it goes into that discussion about Starfleet's use of force. And this is what it looks like if they don't abide by those rules that they're following. But I don't know if I like the impact it's had on the franchise. Because I don't like any of the Mirror Universe episodes, really. And I probably like this one less because of the impact that it's had.
Yeah, that's the kind of shame. It would, I think better about it if it was just this. Like, if it wasn't part of a larger thread of Mirror Universe episodes.
And there's so many Star Trek things that were that. Like, how many different one-off stories of good episodes would I, in retrospect, not like if they just returned to that well? So, like, so much that it got diluted. Because I feel like the struggle with the, like I said, that the first Deep Space Nine Mirror Universe episode, it turned it on its head a little bit, like, because it completely blew up the status quo of that reality. But the three subsequent Deep Space Nine Mirror Universe episodes, I don't like. I feel like it's very diminishing returns. And then Discovery, I feel like Discovery's sojourn into the Mirror Universe was so promising and so disappointing because it didn't stick the landing in my mind.
And it was also pointless and deeply unnecessary.
They also made the same mistakes that DS9 did in the 90s by making it weirdly
biphobic,
homophobic. So,
I feel like if they wanted to return, so I know that one of the things that they were trying to do, because it's in the text of the show, was it was trying to, pardon me, hold up a mirror to our own society, and make us think about the path that we were going down. Because Lorca at one point says, like, make the Empire glorious again. Okay, yeah, it's pretty, like, on the nose.
No, please.
Yep.
I don't want to.
But it's also like, it, like I've said before, it doesn't get fascism. Its idea of the Mirror Universe is everyone's bad and everyone's backstabbing each other, and that's how they prosper, and that, like, that violence is strength. But, like, a species that was like that, I don't think would have built rockets. I mean, the Klingons are so much in their history. Like, I think that they were invaded and stole warp tech from other people. And I think that they're kind of a paper tiger, but they're also not humans. The Terrans are humans. And, like, humans succeed because we cooperate and we collaborate and we build strong social bonds. Like, otherwise we wouldn't have gotten out of, you know, we wouldn't have developed agriculture and I'll say later stages of civilization. And I don't think the Terrans could have done that. But then what they do with it is also kind of confusing. Like, are the Terrans just a reality where fascism prospered? Or is it a reality where humans are just innately evil? Because I think David Cronenberg says in season 3 of Discovery that they did research into Georgia's universe and that they're, like, evil at a molecular level or something.
What?
I might be making that up. It's been a while since I've seen that episode.
Although, but I did assume that to some degree they can't help being evil. I don't know how I'm supposed to view that.
Yeah, that's the kind of contrivance about it. It's like, oh, they're evil because it's in their blood and not like what most evil actually is, which is people see an opportunity to be terrible.
Or just the banality of evil.
But like, yeah, there's the Mary. Well, this is the problem. Is the only... where the only time that Star Trek has ever engaged with the banality of evil is DS9 and Ducat, basically.
Yeah. Who's, I mean, and I know we're getting into Olivia's favorite topic about Ducat.
But that is guy.
But the Cardassians are very, very banality of evil. Like, I have my master's degree in German, so I've read a lot and seen a lot of Holocaust and post-Holocaust literature and fiction. And Duet, the episode with the Cardassian collaborator, is, I mean, if you view it as an allegory for, like, the ramification or the repercussions of the Holocaust, it's one of the best stories of that I've ever seen. Like, it's just really, really good. Because you have a collaborator who did these awful things and feels guilt for that. And is trying to get some kind of penance from a people that he wronged. There's nuance to it, right? He was a bureaucrat because not everyone that was involved. Some people were filling out the documents that. Some people were filling out the paperwork that rounded up people to put on trains to send to Poland, right? And they were just doing their job, and that's what they would say, but their job was like evil. And the mirror universe only knows how to depict that evil with like turbo lift knife fights.
Yeah, you don't get that sense of, you know, people, one of the other important things about all authoritarianism, fascism, is that people know that what they're doing isn't good.
Unless they do cat.
Unless they do, but even in the Cardassian system, you have people like Garrick, or you have people like that, the guy from Duet, who know what they're doing is terrible, but have done it anyway.
And they don't have the courage to stand up because, like we see historically, once a society is at that phase, the courage to stand up is so much harder. Like I think of like Sophie Scholl in Germany, in Nazi Germany, and Die Weiße Rose, how they tried to stand up and get their goal was to get Germany to end the war because they were pacifists. And the consequence was that they were found guilty of treason and executed within a day, right? Like the courage to stand up to something like that is something that most people justifiably don't have. And so then they become complicit in these acts of evil. And I feel like if Star Trek wanted to return to the well of the mirror universe, then they needed to show that. And like, because I think that's a better lesson for people to internalize too, because it's a lesson that I feel like we really, really need today. Like, but
the closest it's really got in recent times would be the whole Klingon War arc where they're gonna nuke Kronos, but they don't even that, they still put the nukes are still there and it's still weird and
as Cornwell says at some point in season two, nation building is a messy business.
Yeah.
Which is a thing you definitely want Federation officials in the 23rd century saying.
I mean, is this episode trip-nippable even? It's not really cursed, it's just kind of camp.
I don't think there is that.
Oh, well, Sulu and Uhura are flirting and on the bridge.
I mean, that's just almost so absurd. It's just funny.
I think we could give 4 for that, yeah. I'd say. That's what I'm giving it.
Yeah, I think it has to have some trip nymphs. Okay, let's give it, I'll give it 4 as well.
I will as well. I thought it wasn't as campy as it could have been. It was.
No.
Really?
Oh, I think it could have been way.
Compared to like the Discovery Mirror Universe, this is not very camp, I think.
But to me, my definition of camp comes from TOS. So like they're the starting point. I don't know.
Do you think it's as campy as do you think it's as campy as campy TOS gets?
No. What's more camp? Smok's brain. Even Plato's stepchildren, sorry, it's the outfits and the weird vibes. That's what makes it camp. Why are they dressed in matching Roman uniforms? That's the camp to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess. Which it's an episode that is what it is, yeah.
Which incarnation of the mirror universe in Trek has the better outfits? The Imperial outfits from Discovery?
This is where you realize that I'm secretly just a TOS stan, because it has to be TOS still.
Yeah.
Like, they gave me a lizard with diamonds for eyes. I can't betray them. It was as hot as Wilson looks in the mirror universe. I'm sorry. TOS win. Which brings us to my Hall of Fame. Why have I just forgotten the name? My high art list. My high art list is really just a subjective list of my favorites, which I compare against guests' favorites. There's no real way to win unless I happen to agree with you. So do you have any episodes in mind that are just the shining stars to you? And I'll just see if they'll be on my Hall of Fame.
So I have to think of an episode that I think that you might consider high art.
I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, what do I like? I like Arena. I like Spock's Brain. I like Masks. I like... What else do I like?
How do you feel about... I think I'm going to keep it in the Mirror Universe. I'm going to keep it in the Mirror Universe. The episode, and I can't remember the name of it, where Giorgio is sent back in time. Mirror Giorgio is sent back in time by the Guardian of Forever for a duo. And she's stuck having to pretend that she's like...
No longer...
That she hasn't grown as a person. She no longer commits immense acts of genocide or eats sapient beings, right? She doesn't do that anymore. She's grown. But the main thing I'm thinking of, and at least some of this is referenced from tweets of yours that I've read.
Oh no. So sorry.
Sonequa Martin-Green playing like Mirror Burnham. Because all her other acting was like Prime Burnham pretending to be evil. But that's Mirror Burnham just let loose to chew the scenery, like eyeliner and all.
I enjoyed seeing Mirror Burnham, I won't lie. But as soon as you said Giorgio, I was like, can this really even make it on the Hall of Fame? I understand in that episode she's had character development, so she's...
I was being somewhat facetious. Evil. I'm not really sold on her character development.
I get that because she's no longer eating people alive. That's
it's gross.
A morally upstanding person. I don't know. I'm just actually thinking now. Are any episodes of Discovery in my high art list?
None of them were really high art.
I'm so sorry. Wait, there are definitely moments, and as I say that, I can't think of them.
It's been so long since I've seen them, but there's like, isn't there like a big opera that they have in that episode if someone dies on stage?
They have like a whole little play where it's about how she conquered and became emperor.
Yeah, and then it's Mira Stamets is gonna try and assassinate her, so she kills him.
The issue is that it's too dark. Like it's I can see with clarity how evil they are. With TOS, it's hidden behind funny outfits, and that's my own fault. So I can see that they're trying to make a moral message in both of those.
With that episode, it's just unsettling.
In that episode, I can't get behind Giorgio and her fans.
I think you can't get past Giorgio, but you've got Mirror Burnham chewing the scenery. You've got Mirror Culver.
Yeah,
honestly, Mirror Burnham is almost enough. I have to stick by my morals, just as Kirk, Uhura, and Bones did. I'm above it. So, you know, it almost made it, but I have to block it. I have to block it. I'm sorry.
Oh my! Does high art have to be the whole episode, or can you carve out just one part to put on the pedestal in the corner?
Okay, I can carve out... Well, do I want to carve out seeing Mira Burnham? I can carve out Mira Burnham's eye makeup, and that is
there
it.
There you go.
There we go.
I would need to go look at pictures from season one with Burnham pretending to be Mira Burnham, but I think she doesn't have the eyeliner.
She doesn't have the look. They just have it over there.
That should have been how they exposed her. That's how they knew.
It's like, you look basic today, bitch. Oh.
This is something that I've thought of since I suggested this to you guys. Cause I think did we already ask the question like would this make us quit Star Trek?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm gonna go back to that for a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
And the reason why is because that episode of Discovery, where Georgia goes back to her time in the Mirror Universe, that episode made me quit Discovery. Like, I watched the first part of that episode and I just was like, I can't watch the show anymore. And I know that they, like, the two-parter ends and Georgia leaves. So there's no reason why it should have made me quit Discovery, but it was that, for some reason, that decision to return to that well and to show these characters just being, like, over-the-top, gratuitously evil, I just was like, I can't watch it. And so I haven't seen any Discovery past that or season four.
So, I mean, I haven't really seen season four either.
Professionally fine.
In our defense, season four didn't really air properly in this country, so
yes,
didn't have access to it.
Yeah.
I mean, some of my difficulty with Discovery and Picard is that, like, I've got a 3-year-old, then a 2-year-old. So if I want to watch something, I either watch it with her or I watch it during, like, the 1 hour of free time I have. And I could never trust Discovery not to have, like, a violent mutilation on the screen while my 3-year-old's in the room.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, I was thinking,
Picard might take someone's eyeballs out. You never know what you're going to see.
Strange New Worlds seemed, well, actually, let me think, having seen some of it, more of it.
That actually just reminded me, Picard season 2, they don't do a Mirror Universe, but they go to the same well. Because the Confederation of Earth is just...
Yeah, which is like the Mirror Universe, but shitter.
It's the Mirror Universe with the serial numbers filed off. And, like, at least part of my question is, did the writers want to make that the Mirror Universe? And someone said, you can't do that. We've done the Mirror Universe too much recently. Or... And then they just said, okay, well, we'll say it's a confederation instead of an empire, but everything else is basically the same.
I mean, for them to destroy both the Mirror Universe and the Borg would just kill me. they've done exactly what your complaint, I mean, both your complaints about the Mirror Universe are, in my mind, to the Borg. Like, it's just... Leave it alone, man.
I didn't...
If you're going to do something with it, have a proper plan, because that just was so...
I did not finish season 2 of Picard. I got to...
Oh, that's fine. Like, you're not missing much.
Just don't finish it. Honestly, I'm so upset with them.
When they go to the Confederation of Earth, I was just like, this again? Because it was the same problems, right? It's the same, like, not understanding what fascism is, right? Because it's clear that they want to lean into the fascism stuff. And it is totalitarian and it is authoritarian, but it feels like, well, Picard, in this universe, you're the worst bastard that's ever existed. And then they go to the just naming things, like, what was the name of the holiday? It wasn't Extermination Day, was it? It was Eradication Day.
It's worse.
it's
such a misunderstanding of, like, but also it's like, you do 10 minutes reading on almost every single genocide. The core part of them is pretending they didn't happen.
Yeah.
Like, at the core of all genocides, like, from big to small, is a basic instinct to pretend they didn't happen.
Yes.
Because we know how bad it was.
It's... Oh, man.
Yeah. Well...
It's just like fascism is just when people are evil. And that's it. But, like, a fascist society wouldn't name it Eradication Day or even necessarily celebrate that. They'd name it something good. Because so much of it is, like, the flattery of, like, you are good people, right? It's just that the scapegoat is evil and has to be destroyed. But you're fine. You're the greatest race that's ever existed. You have all the attributes that humans hold dear. And a lot of that is, like, you know, not eradicating other people.
Well, that's Star Trek. It's not the moral method of the week's never been that great.
Yeah, I think I think so much of it is just that, like, in a contemporary sense, I feel like people need the mess. I feel like people need, like, the realistic message, because so much of it is people being like, well, I'm not a fascist. Because they know what Nazis in an Indiana Jones movie looked like. I'm not like that, so I can't be a fascist. So then they don't have the critical thinking to even analyze what impulses that they have that would be fascist friendly, you know?
Yeah. Definitely a lot of complacency.
Yes.
It's, and on that profoundly depressing note,
it didn't make me quit Star Trek entirely. I'm still watching Lower Decks and I'm still watching Prodigy. All hail Mars.
As you should. And while I dwell on the banality of evil, do you have anything to plug to our listeners? Anything you want them to know?
I don't think so. You can follow me on Twitter at the uppercase I think Constable. But I don't have any projects or anything. I didn't reference a history book that I was going to talk about. It's not my history book, so I won't plug it.
If you would like to bug us, we read our emails this month. I mean, I did. Literally, you'd be like, I read the emails. So you can email us at iquitstartrek@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at @quitstartrekpod. We're much more responsive there. Come and talk about tell us what shit you want to do, episodes you want to quit, people you want to quit. You can't quit me, though. I'm here forever.
I am unquittable.
Olivia is obviously unquittable. She's off the bat. Buy merch from our TeePublic store. I know I've said I'm going to make some new designs. Shockingly, I've been busy. Who'd have known?
It will be the summer range. It's fine. We'll do a summer range.
You know how it is. And we'll have a whole new range. For Death Station of Star Trek, we'll say that. Yeah.
I need to get the Jeans Vision T-shirt.
Yes, absolutely. Highlight.
Yeah, I want to make a shirt with a list of Gene Roddenberry quotes, but like only the PG ones.
PG ones.
I want cursed PG Gene quotes.
So just waves can be printed on a shirt.
In like Star Trek font.
You
know what it's about. You know what it's about.
Can you give us a teaser of one of these quotes?
The one I'm thinking about is just the Masaka mask with like laser eyes.
I would wear that.
Shirt. That just like a like the red alert siren, but it's a ship talk.
Don't give away all our IP, our precious IP.
We don't have IP, Olivia.
Protect our IP to the death. Anyone wants to come for us, try me, bitch.
Apparently we have IP, but yeah, that's in the works. Otherwise, thank you so much, Clay, for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
This has been fun, camp. Olivia hasn't tried to assassinate me to take over the podcast, so I'm going to call it a win.
Oh, yeah. It's just because I don't have the gold sash. If I had the gold sash, then obviously I'd get in character.
Do you have the Tantalus field?
No. I just know how to publish the podcast and Olivia doesn't.
A year in, it's fine.
A year, I haven't given her the password to the Anchor account. So that's my power.
Okay, I'm screwed.
But yeah, until next time, don't grow a goatee. Don't grow a goatee. Or do.
What do you think? Sarek grew a goatee. And he was good.
Sarek? Good.
Mirror Sarek.
Mirror Sarek.
Because Prime Sarek is a jerk. Mirror Sarek is good.
Yeah. Grow a goatee, but only if you're Sarek. Otherwise, don't. Then we'll go with that. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Night.
I want to say good night.
I don't know why I sound